you pursuing a natural lifestyle for yourself and your family? Are you concerned about the standard American diet and options available for healthcare? Are you curious about herbs for health or already practice home herbalism? You've come to the right place. My mom, Naomi Kilbrick, is a Christian clinical herbalist and owner of Laura Chi Wellness. She teaches simple ways to live in a more healthy way and to work with plants to promote and restore health. Welcome to the Family Herbalism Podcast.
Welcome back to the Family Herbalism Podcast. One of the common situations that I find when a client comes into the office for the first time is that they are unfamiliar with tinctures. And then I have some clients who are familiar with tinctures, but maybe have a lot of questions around storage or how long will it last? That's a very common question. And I thought it would be useful to put all of those questions and answers together into a podcast. So today's topic is going to be covering a lot of information around tinctures. I will not be sharing how to make tinctures, but I will provide some additional resources at the end in case you would like to do that. I do have a feeling this will be one of those episodes that people would like to refer back to. So if you want to maybe save this in your favorite episodes so you can come back to it later, that's great. Maybe you want to save the link. That's awesome. I would also encourage you to take notes throughout this process, especially if you are like me and math is not your strong suit. I do keep cheat sheets on hand where I write down specific math, you know, numbers and measurements and things like that when it comes to tinctures, because I find that helpful to refer back to where I don't have to try to remember it. So that might be helpful to you as well. So I'm going to be answering a lot of the questions that I hear in a question and answer format. So I'm going to go through this episode with a list of basic questions that I usually hear around tinctures, and there may be some familiar questions in here. So let's check it out. Okay, first question that I often get is, what is a tincture, right? So these are the clients who come in and they check out those cool bottles on the wall and they go, what is that? Other times we hear or see tinctures or these liquid, you know, substances in a bottle and it says extract. So what is a tincture? What's an extract? What's the difference, or are they the same thing? Let's talk about that. Okay, so a tincture is a liquid extract of a plant, where a plant material, whether that's the roots, the stem, the leaf, flower, or seed, is soaked in a solvent or a menstruum. Now, when we soak it, we typically call that macerated. That's just an herbal term. That means that the plant has been breaking down and releasing its chemical constituents into the solvent or the menstruum, which is the liquid. And typically that's alcohol, but it doesn't have to be, and I'll kind of explain what that difference is. The plant material, after it's been soaking, is then removed, and then the liquid is bottled for use. A standard tincture has one part plant material to five parts alcohol. So if you look at the label, if it's packaged at a store, you will probably see two numbers listed as a ratio with a colon between, and it will probably say 1:5 or 1:7. And that means that for every one part of plant, there are five parts of alcohol, or seven parts, etc. By the time that you see the tincture on the shelf, it has been repackaged into a dropper bottle, and the only contents are the alcohol that is then infused with the plant constituents. Now, the difference between a tincture and an extract is that actually, technically, a tincture is a type of extract. But if it's labeled as an extract, chances are that it contains extra solvents such as water or glycerin. Sometimes they are mixed together, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. And then sometimes it's just a glycerin-based. You might also see that labeled as a glycerite. There are different names and labels that can be used to describe what the product contains, but a tincture is going to be specifically alcohol, and an extract will typically have something in addition to or in place of the alcohol. And there are benefits of working with a tincture over a tea or vice versa. And this brings me to the next question, which is, why would you work with a tincture over a tea? And in addition to the fact that it's sometimes easier for somebody to work with a tincture simply because it's more convenient, you know, it doesn't have to be prepared every day. It's just sitting on the counter ready to go. It travels well. It takes up less space. It lasts longer. These are some of the benefits of working with a tincture. But it also will contain a different profile of nutrients than, say, a tea or a glycerite or some other type of format for your herbs. So there are, again, different types of solvents that might be used to extract the plant material. Sometimes vinegar is used, and vinegar is a common solvent that is used for digestive aids because it extracts vitamins and minerals well. And so it helps to provide some of those nutrients that might be difficult to get from your food, for example. Alcohol does not extract vitamins and minerals quite as well, but it gets everything else, including many of the complex chemicals that we focus on for healing purposes. So when you're looking at supplements, for example, and it tells you exactly what chemicals are included from plants, alcohol can do the same thing in a tincture form. And then the third solvent that we commonly see being used to extract plant material into a liquid form is glycerin, which is an alcohol sugar, and it extracts the volatile oils from flowers, berries, and leaves pretty well. The volatile oils are also known as essential oils. These are the things that evaporate very easily. That's why they have the name volatile. And it extracts those and holds those really well, but it doesn't extract other ingredients quite as much. So we can overall work with any one of these, and it will provide us with some benefits. But depending on the goal that you have in mind, you might choose one solvent over another. The next question that I sometimes hear is, do I have to keep it in the fridge? And for a client who's coming into the office, they're going to look at my shelf and think, well, these tinctures are not on the not in a fridge, so they're probably okay outside of the fridge. But it's always good not to assume. And the fact is that we can keep tinctures outside of the fridge. They are shelf stable regardless of what solvent is used. But there are some key things we want to keep in mind. We do want to make sure that they stay out of light and away from heat because the light and the heat will cause those properties to break down. And sometimes especially things like glycerin and oils or other types of solvents that are used do eventually go rancid, and also we're more prone to develop mold and other things in these solvents, and then we don't want that to happen. So keep them, you can keep them out of the fridge, but keep them out of light, keep them away from heat, try to avoid exposing them to dramatic fluctuations in temperature, and of course, having them in a sealed dark glass bottle is best. That's why you will see most of the time tinctures are sold in either amber, which is the dark brown, or cobalt blue bottles. Either one of those is fine. Another question that I often hear is how long before it goes bad? So if you are working with a tincture regularly, chances are you're going to run out before it goes bad anyway. All tinctures do lose their effectiveness over time. This is no different than working with herbs and spices that you have in your pantry. Eventually, they start losing their color, they start losing their nutrition. You can still work with them. They're not gonna hurt you, and it's the same with the tinctures. It's not gonna hurt you, but it probably won't be quite as helpful. However, all tinctures do have the potential for actually going bad, which would be that point where it's not only not going to hurt you, but it's probably best to avoid it. And so I'm going to break this down based on the type of solvent. Vinegar-based tinctures, or I should say vinegar-based extractions, which can also be called acida because they have acetic acid. These generally last 6 to 8 months. That's the reference point that most people use, but a lot of herbalists will say it'll last you at least a year. That's vinegar-based extracts. And glycerin-based, these will last 3 to 5 years, although it's typically best to use them within 3 years. There are some pointers that are important to remember for glycerin-based extracts for when these are really great for people who have had trouble with alcohol in the past, who have liver conditions and need to avoid alcohol, or for kids. They tend to receive it better because it has a better taste. It is sweet. And it's also helpful to know that it won't impact blood sugar levels. These are just some random thoughts that I had about the glycerin-based one. But as far as how long before it goes bad, finally we come to alcohol-based tinctures. These are true tinctures. They say 3 to 6 years is best. And that's really the range for its most effectiveness, using it within that time period. I have personally found that my tinctures will retain their value for at least 10. I have continued to use a tincture at that point and found that it's just as effective. And actually, I did find a study that showed that tinctures, which have been kept in a good environment, in dark bottles, out of extreme heat, have been lab tested and found that they can remain effective for more than 10 years. So they do store really well, but it's ideal to use them within that 6-year period. The higher the alcohol content, the longer it will last. So just because it's alcohol-based doesn't mean that it's gonna go bad at a specific time. So alcohol that has a lower alcohol content, such as brandy, won't last as long as vodka, which won't last as long as Everclear. These absorb more quickly and have more consistent results. And then we have double extractions, which use water to extract the water-soluble properties, and then we have alcohol to extract more constituents and preserve the entire tincture or the extract, and you put them together. So that's a double extraction. These are common. This process is commonly used for mushrooms or other plant materials that have a lot of complexity to them that we want to really maximize. Roots are also commonly done that way. They have the benefit of extracting more components than either one alone. However, because it has the water, it won't last as long. So these have to have at least 25% alcohol in order to actually preserve the extract, but they will only last up to 5 years rather than, the 6+ years. But how do you know if the tincture has actually gone bad? The first indicator is notice how it smells and tastes. If you've been smelling it and tasting all along, and then you remember what it smelled and tasted like, and then you try it and it's like, ugh, that's really off-putting, then there's probably something wrong with it. That doesn't happen very often, but the older it gets, the more likely that is to happen. Obviously, if you see mold growing on top, which is more likely in a glycerin, just throw it out. And then another indicator that you want to watch for is the texture of the rubber bulb, which is the part that you suck the liquid up into the tube with. It should feel soft and pliable, but the older it gets, the more stiff it becomes. And so if it gets to that point where it's hard to squish it, or when you squish it and let go, it doesn't pop out again, then just throw the whole thing out, because the rubber has actually started to break down and you're going to have particles of that in your tincture, which is not a good thing. The next question that I hear a lot is, how long before I run out? This one's really important to my clients who come in and they want to know, how much tincture do I buy before, to make sure that it lasts until I come in again? Or maybe it's for someone who wants to order some tincture and they want to make sure they order enough to last them for a while before they have to make another order. This is where the math comes in and where I highly encourage you to write down this information, because it will come in handy at some point if you are working with tinctures. Okay, so let's look at this by ounce. Dropper bottles that you purchase the tinctures in typically come in 1 to 2 ounce bottles, but you can also get them in 4 ounce bottles or even higher. But 1 and 2 are the most common. If you go to a natural health food store and you pick up a bottle of tincture, it's going to be one of those two sizes. A 1 ounce bottle will have about 15 full droppers full, or the equivalent of 2 tablespoons, which is also the equivalent of 456 drops. A 2 ounce bottle is going to be double that size. So it will have 30 droppers, or about a quarter of a cup of liquid, or 912 drops. And then just to throw in an extra size, a 4-ounce bottle will of course be double the 2-ounce. So it has about 60 droppers, or half a cup of liquid, and 1,824 drops approximately. Now, this is where it gets a little bit tricky, because you might be taking a different amount of tincture. If you are working with a specific protocol and you want to work with a single or a blend and you're taking the same amount every day, it becomes more predictable. But of course, if you're working with, say, elderberry or echinacea and you're just using them for occasional use to help you fend off a virus, it's going to be a little bit different. So let's say that you're taking one drop every day. A single ounce is going to last you well over a year. If you are taking 5 drops a day, a single ounce will last you about 3 months. If you are taking 10 drops a day, a single ounce will last you about 45 days. If you're taking about half a dropper once daily, an ounce should last about a month. And then if you take two full droppers twice a day, as in the protocol that I give to clients with Lyme disease, a 4-ounce bottle is only gonna last about 2 weeks. So when you go up to some of these different situations where you need more tincture, you'll go through it pretty quickly and you don't even have to worry about that bottle going bad. That brings me to the next question, which is, can you reuse bottles? I actually just mailed a huge box full of used bottles to my mentee Dana, or actually my intern, I should say now, because I have been keeping this collection of these used bottles. I just can't justify throwing them away because they could come in handy. I reuse them for my family or for my friends, but I can't resell them like that. So I just keep them kicking around. However, for personal use, they definitely continue working. So as long as the rubber dropper top is still soft and pliable, you can continue working with them. To wash them, it's really easy. After you're done using the tincture, you take the dropper off the glass tube, so the bulb part off the glass tube, then you wash all the parts in hot soapy water. I like to air dry mine and then store them in a Ziploc bag. And then also, this is really important, make sure to relabel them if you use them again. Reusing them does come in handy when you intend to use large amounts of tincture over time. You can save money by purchasing larger bottles, say a 4-ounce or an 8-ounce bottle, and then transferring some of that liquid to a smaller bottle. Or you can split it up so you can have a bottle in different locations or in different bags. Other situations where this comes in handy are when you're traveling by air and they have restrictions on bottle size that's allowed, or when blending prepared tinctures, which I'll talk more about shortly. So if you need to get empty bottles, you can always order them on Amazon, but if you have a tincture you've used up, keep the bottle, and then it might be that it comes in handy in the future. Another question that I often hear is it safe for children and pregnant women or breastfeeding women to use a tincture? And the answer is that it depends. It depends on the plant being used, and it depends on the person that's using it. But if we're talking strictly tinctures, as in if the plant is generally good for that person, and you just want to know if kids and pregnant women can take tinctures, the answer is 100% yes. This is actually going to lead into the next question, but the short answer is that if we're talking about the alcohol, nothing funky is going to happen to either kids or unborn babies if they're exposed to standard doses of tincture. And that brings me into the next question, which is, can you get drunk using a tincture? Now, this may seem like a silly question to some of you, but to others, it's quite serious. Some people, including children, have asked me about this. For those who have never had alcohol before, or who have had a very little or a bad experience, they may only associate alcohol in any quantity with specific results. So for those of you who have wondered this question, let's put it into pictures. A 2-ounce bottle of tincture contains a half of a shot. A shot is a standard measuring size for hard alcohol, which is what tinctures are made from. The amount an adult-sized person would need to experience the legal blood alcohol level in the U.S., which is the equivalent of a really good alcohol buzz, is typically 3 to 4 shots drunk within an hour. Of course, the amount depends on the person, but let's just say you drank an entire 2-ounce bottle of tincture. That would be at max 1/6 the amount that you would need to get to that point. Alcohol poisoning can happen when you drink a large amount of alcohol in a short amount of time. If you have a small child who manages to drink a whole bottle of tincture, they will be hit harder and it would be appropriate to contact their doctor for guidance, but chances are they would be loopy, but just fine. I suspect that if that were to happen, poison control or the doctor would recommend activated charcoal, which would absorb much of the alcohol and diminish those potential effects. However, as scary as that sounds, it's important to remember that normal dosages of tincture can never get anyone to the point where they would even feel any symptoms of drinking alcohol, even if they're quite small and definitely not drunk. You could also compare it to using vanilla extract, which is the equivalent of a tincture, and even a serving of ripe fruit can have more alcohol than a dose of tincture. Some herbalists sell tincture bottles with child safety locks on them. The ones I have experienced are very effective, and I have had to ask manufacturers for different caps because healthy adults and especially elderly clients that I've had have had a hard time getting into them. So we know they work. You can also order these caps and replace any caps you have with them just to be extra cautious. Amazon is one place that you can find extra caps for tincture bottles. Can you remove the alcohol from the tincture before taking a dose? So, if it's important that you do not have any alcohol, for example, you're a recovering alcoholic, have fatty liver disease, or you just feel really uncomfortable with the idea, you can add the tincture to a cup of hot water for 5 minutes, and the alcohol will completely evaporate, leaving the plant properties behind. This works really well in a cup of tea, for example, and oftentimes I will have clients who simply like to combine their remedies to make things simpler and bring their cup of tea into the living room and not think about all these different dosages, so they'll just add their tincture right to their tea, and that's a great way to both remove the alcohol and simplify things. Now, what's the proper dose? When you're trying to decide how much tincture to take, if no one is recommending a specific dose to you that you're seeking guidance from, there are a couple of things to know about taking dosages first. One question that I have received is, how do you know how much or how many drops are in the dropper tube? Because with different size bottles, it appears that there is a different number of drops in the tube. Now, the answer is that dropper tubes may be longer or shorter depending on the size of the bottle, and it can appear that one holds more than another, but the bulb is what determines how much is drawn up into the tube, and bulbs tend to be a standard size. So it actually should be consistent as far as the amount being drawn up in, and this is why a dropper in a 4-ounce bottle looks like it holds hardly anything compared to a dropper in a 1-ounce bottle. But when you're sucking up as much as you can into that dropper tube, that is considered one dropper. The tube will not appear to be full even if you're using a 1-ounce bottle, and that's okay. It should hold about 30 drops, sometimes more. There is a little bit of variation that can happen with the bulb size. You can test your dropper by drawing some up and just squeezing it one drop at a time back into your bottle and counting it out. If another thing you want to keep in mind is that if you have a double extracted solvent, so you have both water and alcohol, you may also want to shake the bottle before use to make sure that it's well combined. I also do this if there is sediment in the bottom, which I'll explain what the sediment is in a little bit. All right, so standard dosage listed on the side of the bottle is often 1 to 3 droppers full, taken 1 to 3 times daily. So that means squeezing the bulb, letting go, and sucking up as much as you can, up to 3 of those, up to 3 times daily. The actual dosage you should take should be based on a number of factors, such as the herb that you're taking, your body size, and the imbalance you're trying to correct. As a general rule, if you're an average-sized adult and you're taking an herb that is generally regarded as safe, then this is an appropriate dosage to take, that 1 to 3 droppers, 1 to 3 times a day. If you're a smaller adult or less than 150 pounds, or you respond easily to medicine or herbs, you may only want to take half that amount. If you're a larger person or less sensitive to remedies, you may want to double the dosage to at least 2 droppers full. The safer the plant, the larger you can take of a dose size, but it isn't necessarily going to be helpful. It's just that you have that ability to without causing any problems at all. If a child is under 6 months old, I prefer not to give them anything internally anyway. There are certain teas that might be appropriate for a baby under 6 months who is having a bit of stomach trouble, perhaps, but there are other ways of providing medicine, such as through mom or topically, maybe in a bath, that might be a little bit safer for a young child. If you have a child who is between 6 and 12 months, a standard dosage would be 1 drop for every 5 pounds of body weight, taken 1 to 3 times a day. But again, it depends on the herb that is being used, size of the person, and all that. As the child gets older, you can gradually increase the dose you give them until they're about 12 years old or the height of an adult, in which case you can just give them an adult dose. There are certain cases where using a divided dose technique may actually be more effective. In things like insomnia or infections, where splitting them up into a larger number of smaller doses gives you more effectiveness or exposes the body to more plant than if you are giving them one larger dose. For example, if a full dropper is 1 dose for helping someone to fall asleep, then taking 10 drops every 30 minutes 3 times before bed will likely be more effective than 1 full dropper right before bed. Another dosing option you may want to consider is microdosing. This is the technique that I use for most situations for my clients, and it involves using a very small dose for all humans, regardless of age or size. I prefer using this method for a number of reasons. For one, it's often safer. 2, it can be much cheaper. And 3, it's usually at least as effective as taking a larger dose for most situations. This is what it looks like in terms of how many drops. So for more serious or chronic illnesses, you would use only 1 to 3 drops for a full dose, and that could be 1 to 3 times a day. For a chronic illness with less severity, I would use 5 to 10 drops. And when I say chronic illness, it doesn't have to be something with a diagnosis. It could just be, you know, say just in quotation marks, it could be chronic fatigue or something that maybe is more difficult to address and doesn't have an official treatment that is provided by the doctors, but is still really difficult to live with. And then if you have maybe a weakness in your body and you're really looking just to provide extra nutrition and tonic support, you would go up to 15 to 20 drops. Sometimes, even with microdosing, I will start with what we call a loading dose, which is where you give a full dropper or a larger amount, even in acute situations, and then you back up to more of the divided doses where you give a smaller amount more frequently. So I do this in cases of infection or injury where we want to immediately start the process of healing and then continually expose the body to plant material for a while. In certain cases, higher doses, which are really more standard doses, are more effective than microdosing. I have experimented with this a little bit and found that in some cases this can be true, such as with Lyme disease, where I will work a person up to 2 full droppers 3 times a day if they can handle it. And that's not always the case, but I will work up to that dose because I find that it can be more effective than with microdosing. All right, how do you take a tincture? What if you don't like the taste? How do you disguise it? If you are the only person using the tincture, one method is to put the drops directly under your tongue, and then if you desire, chase it down with a little water. If there is more than one person using this tincture, for example, if this is echinacea you have on hand for illness, you may not want to put it directly under your tongue because there is the off chance that it may come in contact with your own microbiome, and that any kind of bacteria or anything you're carrying could be transferred to another person, in which case putting it a few drops in, or the dose, into a little bit of water and then swallowing that may be safer. I like to put my personal tinctures underneath my tongue and then add a sip of water afterwards and hold it for several seconds before swallowing. You can also put your tincture again in a small amount of water and swish and swallow, or hold and swallow. Some people can hold on to tinctures, just plain tinctures, for an insane amount of time. It is not really necessary. What you're trying to do is expose the blood, the open access to your bloodstream in your mouth through different pores in your body, to be able to bring in the properties of the plant and really get it like direct access to your bloodstream as quickly as possible. And that really doesn't take very long. We're talking maybe 10 seconds, maybe 15 seconds at most. It doesn't take very long. And then you can swallow it afterwards. For kids who are sensitive or adults taking especially strong flavored tinctures, you can also disguise the tincture by putting it in a small amount of juice or milk or tea. However, with that said, if the goal of the tincture is to stimulate digestion, you have to be able to taste it. So don't use anything other than a little water if you need to dull down the strength a bit. Now, earlier I mentioned that there is sometimes a little bit of sediment in the bottom of the bottle. If you pick up the tincture bottle and you look through it, you hold it up to the light for a little bit so you can see through it. If you notice that there is sediment in the bottom, and that's how you purchased it and you know it was new, or you made it yourself and you observed that the sediment was there from the beginning, that's okay. A little bit of cloudiness actually indicates some starch from the plant, especially if it was a root. So for example, dandelion root tincture will often have a lot of sediment in the bottom, and that's actually a positive indicator of inulin, which is really good for you. If that sediment is new, so if you've been checking your tincture and it never had any sediment before, and now all of a sudden it does have sediment, that indicates that this tincture has gone bad and you should chuck it. If the sediment is actually bits of brown flakes, that is the resin from the plant that has solidified. And this can happen over time, and that's actually normal. It's aging, but it's not gonna hurt you at all. It's just part of that process. Can you blend tinctures together? The quick answer is yes. Very often you can blend tinctures together. You can either, if you're making your tincture, you can combine different plants that go well together into one large jar and prepare your tincture as a whole unit, or you can purchase different tinctures separately and blend them together. There are few that should actually not go together. Many plants work really well or even boost the effectiveness of other plants in the blend. For your situation, you will want to research whether your herbs can go together or not, or talk to an herbalist, but blending tinctures together offer benefits such as simplifying your herbal regimen. It makes it easier to travel, helps you to be more consistent if you don't have to take so many tinctures, and the remedy may actually be more effective for you. If you're moving tinctures from bigger to smaller jars, make sure that the new jars you buy are either amber or cobalt blue color, which we talked about earlier. It blocks out the light, and you can find these on Amazon. Now, what about allergies? I have had a few clients, actually quite a few clients, come in who either have an allergic condition or they have some type of immune activation where they don't actually know what they're going to react to. They're very sensitive to things. So if allergies are a concern for you and you would like to test an herb, a simple way to do this is to put a few drops of the tincture onto your inner arm for about a minute. If within 24 hours you see any redness or puffy eyes, there's a rash or tightness in the throat or any other symptom of having an allergic reaction, then you know that herb is not safe to take internally. If you don't notice any reaction, you can take a very small dose internally, perhaps a microdose, and wait to see if you notice any reaction to the herb. If you still don't notice any reaction, then you can move on to progressively higher doses until you get to whatever is the right dose for you. I do also know that people with a tendency toward allergic reactions have to be very cautious about the type of plant they use. So you will want to do some research if this is your situation. You want to do some research and find out what are herbs that are typically anti-allergic or have antihistamine properties or stabilize the immune system while the body is utilizing the different components of that herb just to start with things that are going to be a little bit more gentle and gradually work up to more challenging plants as the body heals. Well, we have covered a lot of information, and yet I also expect that it won't be long before I start thinking of more questions that I could have answered here. There is always more learning to do, and there are lots of questions to explore and answer. I hope that you have found this helpful. And also, if you would like to learn about making tinctures, or perhaps you have other questions about tincture use, I recommend a few different books that you might want to check out. They are The Herbal Apothecary by J.J. Purcell, The Modern Herbal Dispensatory by Thomas Easley and Stephen Horn, The Herbal Medicine Maker's Handbook by James Green, and Making Plant Medicine by Richo Cech. I appreciate you being here and listening. I've had some more requests come in for topics, so I'll begin working on those. If you have found this episode helpful, would you please consider leaving a review and sharing this with a loved one? I would really appreciate that. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I will be back again with some more information very soon. The Family Herbalism Podcast is created for educational purposes only. You are responsible for any and all medical and health decisions you choose to make. If you experience a medical emergency, please contact appropriate medical providers. To receive herbalist support, please visit www.laureltreewellnessllc.com. If you enjoy this podcast and find it helpful, please share it with your friends and family. Thank you for listening.